It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have overcast skies, 39 degrees outside presently. Out at the airport, they are showing 93% humidity, northwest winds to 7 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 50% chance of rain for the rest of the day. Cloudy skies for today, tonight, going to mostly cloudy tomorrow. High near 40 today, overnight low of about 30. Northwest winds to 10 will turn to the west this evening and continue from the west tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, the 2023 Arctic Winter Games are underway. Protesters against the Willow Project are seemingly few and far between in Washington, D.C. Liz Ruskin has that report. And a trial is finally set for late summer in a criminal case involving the deaths of two teenagers in a crash in Unalaska 4 years ago.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has met with Palestinian leaders in the West Bank, saying it's clear to him that all sides must work to restore calm. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports Blinken is ending his Middle East trip without any announced breakthroughs on ending Israeli-Palestinian tensions and violence.
Blinken reiterated Washington's, quote, ironclad commitment to Israel's security, but added that on this trip he also heard deep concern about the current trajectory in Israel and the West Bank. In what may be seen as a caution to Israel, Blinken said the U.S. will oppose anything that runs counter to moving toward freedom and improved lives for Palestinians, including, he said, Jewish settlements, evictions, and home demolitions. But Blinken, who planned his Mideast trip in a very different climate, urged both sides not to take steps that make things worse. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Jerusalem.
The public health emergency declared nearly 3 years ago over COVID-19 is expected to end May 11th. NPR's Tamara Keith reports on what the White House's announcement today could mean for people across the U.S.
House Republicans have been pushing for the COVID emergency declarations to end immediately. But the White House says that would cause chaos because there are a lot of policies Americans and the healthcare system have come to depend on that are tied to those emergencies. Administration officials argue they need time to build the off-ramp for things like flexible telehealth, free COVID tests, and relaxed rules about patient treatment when hospitals are overloaded. If the public health emergency is allowed to expire as planned in May, the White House expects things like at-home COVID tests will no longer be covered by insurance, much like home pregnancy tests and other over-the-counter medical devices. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
Gun violence in America is also widely viewed as a public health crisis. The nonprofit Gun Violence Archive is reporting more than 50 mass shootings involving four or more individuals this month alone. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says the government needs to invest more in examining and addressing the crisis.
The research in this space has been really starved because Congress did not put forward any funds for gun violence research until literally just a few years ago. I was grateful to see that step forward in 2018, that finally allocate some federal funds to gun violence research, but we need a lot more of it. The depth of the problem is profound. In 2020, more Americans died of gun-related injuries than in any other year on record.
Murthy on NPR's Here and Now. Add PayPal Holdings to the list of major companies slashing jobs. Details from NPR's David Gura.
In a memo to PayPal employees, CEO Dan Schulman says the company is cutting about 7% of its staff worldwide because of a challenging macroeconomic environment and more competition. January has been a tough month for the tech industry. Some of the sector's largest companies, including Alphabet and Microsoft, have laid off tens of thousands of workers.
NPR's David Gura reporting. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The 2023 Arctic Winter Games got underway in Wood Buffalo, Alberta, in a blaze of fireworks last night. More than 2,000 athletes, their coaches, and support teams gathered for opening ceremonies. In all, seven Arctic nations have come together to compete in winter sports as well as traditional games from indigenous cultures like the Inuit and Dene. Alice Martin, a Cree elder, gave the blessing. Team Alaska, which represents the United States, has more than 240 athletes from 30 different communities in the competition. They flew to Canada over the weekend in two chartered jets. Sarah Frampton, who is Team Alaska's chef, that's French for chief, says she felt a lot of pride as she looked at the Alaska athletes dressed in uniforms of gold and blue, the state colors.
Marching out onto the field for the opening ceremonies is unlike any other experience. We're proud to represent our state and our country. You just have to be there to feel the energy. You see the smiles on those kids' faces, even though they're in, 20 below, they're just grinning from ear to ear. Their toes might be freezing, but they've got a smile on their face.
Cold temperatures have been a challenge at Wood Buffalo. So far, Team Alaska has won two medals in alpine skiing, one silver and one bronze. By the end of February, the Biden administration says it will decide whether to allow the Willow Project to move ahead on federal land in Alaska's western Arctic. Willow is an $8 billion proposal from ConocoPhillips to drill at five sites near the village of Nooksut. In many ways, it's a classic Arctic drilling fight, with the state and Alaska's congressional delegation pushing for the project, and on the other side, national environmental groups trying to stop it. This time, though, the environmental groups have an uphill fight in the court of public opinion. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
Outside the White House a few weeks ago, a lunch hour protest against Willow was hard to find.
Okay, I am here in Lafayette Park looking at the White House. It is past the arrival time.
There was an anti-nuclear vigil, a man broadcasting Bible verses over a loudspeaker, a few tourists.
Usually the sign for an Arctic protest is somebody is wearing a polar bear suit. That's how you know you're at the Arctic drilling protest. I don't see anybody in a polar bear suit.
And then, at the edge of Lafayette Park, I see somebody handing out posters.
Thank you for coming. Yeah. Monica with the Alaska Wilderness League. We're so happy you're here to help stop the Will Project. We've got signs. We've got beating.
A contingent from the offices of the Defenders of Wildlife showed up in one fell swoop, giving the protest critical mass.
No Willow. No.
Willow.
No.
Willow.
What do we want?
Climate action.
When do we want it?
Willow hasn't received the attention that other Arctic controversies have, but it would be the largest North Slope drilling project since the 1990s. ConocoPhillips says it would create hundreds of jobs, boost output of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline by 20%, and deliver billions in revenue to government at all levels. One problem for those trying to stop it is the land designation. Willow isn't in the Arctic Refuge. The vast tract of federal land it would sit on is called the National Petroleum Reserve.
There's a lot of similarities. It's just, of course, different because the public can relate to a habitat that is called a National Wildlife Refuge probably better than they can one that the Willow Project is in.
Robert Dewey from Defenders of Wildlife says it's just tougher to rally the public against drilling in an area that's called a petroleum reserve.
I think that's one of our challenges, is to educate the public that the ecological values are similar. This area is particularly sensitive, whether the development is in a wildlife refuge or is not too far away in another part of the Arctic.
The Alaska Wilderness League says opponents sent President Joe Biden 120,000 comments objecting to the Willow Project. That's not nothing. But proposals to open the Arctic Refuge to drilling could draw more than a million comments. And protests against ANWR drilling were often huge. Getting Willow approved is a top priority of U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, and she uses the land designation to help make her point.
This is important, really, to the country. This is a significant project, and if we can't produce oil resources within the National Petroleum Reserve, it causes one to question, where?
Last month, Congresswoman Mary Peltola joined Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan at the White House to nudge the Biden administration to approve it. One elected official who doesn't want the Willow Project approved? Nuiqsut Mayor Rosemary Atongaruk.
We want to feel safe in our homes and our daily lives and to be able to continue to be Inupiat in our lands and waters and eat our foods and that they're healthy for our families.
Atongaruk's presence added weight to the White House protest, but she was also in Washington to make her pitch to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the first Native American to hold the job. Haaland has pledged to listen to indigenous people. But plenty of Inupiat do want Willow to proceed, including the mayors of other North Slope communities, and they're talking to Haaland, too. Groups like Voice of the Arctic Inupiat say the revenues would sustain their culture. Congresswoman Peltola says the consensus of the region is in favor of Willow.
Not everyone has the same exact feeling about it, but it's the majority, and the region as a whole and clusters of villages come to a consensus, even if there are outlier voices.
Peltola says the Biden administration is taking a careful approach, but she's hopeful that Willow will get the nod. Biden is under pressure from all sides. The right wants increased domestic production and is hammering him about high fuel prices. The left wants him to make good on pledges to take climate change seriously and reduce drilling on federal lands. At the White House protest, a few dozen people chant for several minutes and pose for a group photo holding blue and black Stop Willow signs. Then they roll up their banners and disperse. Reporting from Washington, D.C., I'm Liz Ruskin.
A trial is set for late summer in the criminal case involving the deaths of two teenagers in a crash on Unalaska's Mount Ballyhoo nearly 4 years ago. At a hearing on Friday, Superior Court Judge Herman Walker Jr. scheduled the trial for late August in Unalaska. Police say Dustin Ruckman, an 18-year-old high schooler at the time, drove his truck off Unalaska's Yalakta Head Cliff in early May of 2019. 16-year-old Carly McDonald and 18-year-old Kiara Renteria Haste were ejected from the vehicle and killed as the pickup descended 900 feet down the cliff. Ruckman told police he was thrown from the vehicle. He suffered minor injuries. About a year later, prosecutors charged Ruckman with multiple felonies, including manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide. The court process has moved slowly. Some hearings have been vacated or reset due to the COVID-19 pandemic, or to allow both sides to prepare trial materials and expert witnesses. Ruckman's lawyer has also undergone cancer treatment since the case began. Even with a trial date and location set, closure for the victims' families won't come for quite some time.
This thing just seems to keep dragging on with them.
Derek Haste is Kiara's father. He says he wants to see the process move more quickly. Kiara's mother, Diana Renteria, agrees. During Friday's hearing, she told the judge she wanted the trial to take place in Unalaska so that expert witnesses and jurors could see firsthand the location of the crash on top of Mount Ballyhoo. Diana says it's taken too long to get to this point.
I think I lost it a little bit in there, but I just celebrated Kiara's 22nd birthday and I've been having a lot of meltdowns. So I just want accountability and justice for both girls that didn't deserve to leave us.
For now, Unalaska is set to host the trial, but the court will have to find impartial jurors. In the remote island community of about 4,500 year-round residents, that might prove to be difficult. If they can't find a proper jury, Judge Walker says they'll have to find a different venue. Walker says the court will begin jury selection on the first day of the trial. The court can block out time in Anchorage later in case they can't find enough impartial jurors and the trial has to be moved. Carly's mother, Alyssa McDonald, worries that could push this trial back even further.
It's just weighing heavily on the families. The longer it takes, the more strain and stress, and there's just this unresolved discord that's never going to, it's never going to be right. But why would it take 7 months for them to plan to come here to look for the jury? That's too long.
The trial is currently set for August 28th. Judge Walker says it should take roughly 2 weeks. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced today that it is effectively killing the controversial Pebble Mine project. The Pebble deposit contains a vast store of copper, gold, and molybdenum. The EPA says the mine would cause too much damage to habitat that supports the world's largest remaining wild salmon runs. KDLG's Izzy Ross has this report.
This is a decision that some Bristol Bay tribes have pushed the EPA to take for 13 years. United Tribes of Bristol Bay Executive Director Alana Hurley says it's historic.
Many of those who began this battle are no longer with us. New generations of our people have been born and raised with the cloud of pebble hanging overhead. But our ancestral responsibility to safeguard our watershed and fishery has united all of us in our work to defend the world's last great wild salmon fishery.
The EPA is exercising its rarely used veto authority under Section 404C of the Clean Water Act to prohibit mining the Pebble deposit. This is just the third time in the past 30 years that the federal agency has used that authority. Hurley thanked the Biden administration multiple times during an EPA news conference. She pointed to the administration's nation-to-nation discussions with the region's tribes and said the federal government consulted with them when the state government would not. She also said tribes will continue their efforts to protect the region.
Our work will not be done until every inch of our traditional homelands are protected, and EPA's action today helps us build that future, where our people can remain Yupik, Dena'ina, and Aleutiq for generations to come.
The Pebble Company had proposed building an open-pit copper and gold mine about 17 miles from Iliamna Lake. The EPA says the mine's harm to salmon habitat would be unacceptable. It would destroy 100 miles of streams that support spawning and breeding, and over 2,000 acres of surrounding wetlands. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers denied Pebble a federal permit 2 years ago, but the mining company is appealing that decision. Pebble CEO John Shively said in a written response that the EPA's use of its Clean Water Act authority during the appeal process is, quote, unlawful and unprecedented, and that it will likely result in legal action. Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a statement Tuesday along with leaders of several state departments blasting the EPA's veto. He said the veto sets a dangerous precedent. Quote, alarmingly, it lays the foundation to stop any development project, mining or non-mining, in any area of Alaska with wetlands and fish-bearing streams, unquote. The EPA's determination goes beyond banning Pebble's proposed project. It also bans future projects that would cause similar damage and restricts the discharge of mining materials in certain waters near the site. EPA Administrator Michael Regan said this decision is focused on the Pebble deposit.
We know that this particular project would have adverse impacts that would significantly impact not only the industry, but also impact the ecosystem and have a significant impact from a cultural standpoint as well.
The EPA Office of Water Assistant Administrator Radhika Fox says the agency's decision means that the Army Corps cannot grant Pebble's appeal as proposed, but she says it does not ban every future project.
It provides a roadmap for those types of projects that would create these adverse impacts, but does not at all apply to other projects that could potentially be considered. And it does not apply to any resource development, you know, beyond this one in the state of Alaska.
The EPA says the habitat around the Pebble deposit supports the diversity of Bristol Bay's salmon and many other species, which in turn sustain the region's Alaska Native communities and support its sport and commercial fisheries. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Wage growth is slowing. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
The Labor Department says wages and benefits rose 1% in the final 3 months of last year. It's the third straight quarterly moderation in the Employment Cost Index, which could reassure the Federal Reserve in its fight against inflation. Strong results today from some bellwether companies. McDonald's said traffic at its stores rose 5% last year despite higher prices. Its fourth quarter profit was up 16%. General Motors' quarterly profit was up by the same percentage as its production volumes recovered late in the year. And home prices declined 0.6% in November compared to a month earlier. That's the fifth straight month of decline in the Case-Shiller Index. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, shaping the future of real estate for a better world.
¿Tiene curiosidad sobre el desarrollo de su hijo? El programa de aprendizaje infantil de Cana, Head Start the Rural Cap y el Distrito Escolar de Kodiak Island Borough están ofreciendo una evaluación basada en el juego, sin costo, para niños recién nacidos hasta los 5 años, el 4 de febrero, de 10 a.m. a 2 p.m. en la Escuela Primaria East. Puedes programar una cita llamando al 907-486-7574. Se prefieren citas, pero se aceptarán visitas sin previo aviso.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via PIC, click Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to pick, click, give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 31st and last day of January, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:14. It will set again at 5:32. That will give us 4 minutes. That will give us 8 hours and 19 minutes of daylight. That is a gain of 4 minutes and 22 seconds compared to yesterday. Coincidentally, here on the east side, we have a low tide coming up at 4:22 a.m. this morning. That will be 4.22 feet. So I guess 4:22 is your lucky number for the day. Currently 39 degrees outside under overcast skies. Our record high for this date is 50 degrees, set in 1963. Our record low is minus 5, set in 1999. The Weather Service is calling for a 50% chance of rain for this afternoon. Cloudy skies for the rest of the day and tonight, going to mostly cloudy tomorrow. High near 40 today, overnight low about 30 tonight. Northwest winds to 10 will turn to the west tonight and continue in a westerly direction tomorrow. 30% chance of rain tonight and tomorrow, and a 30% chance of rain on Wednesday night, going to mostly cloudy skies on Thursday. So pretty typical Kodiak weather. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. North winds to 20 knots today and seas to 7 feet. Northwest 20 tonight, seas to 7 feet. And northwest 20 tomorrow, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, north winds to 15 knots today, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, westerly winds to 20 knots and seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 15, seas to 3 feet, going to variable 10 on Wednesday night. Seas coming down to 2 feet for Wednesday night and Thursday in the Shelikof. Looking at our local tides, we do have a low tide coming up next at 5:18 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 9/10 of a foot tide, followed by a high tide just after midnight at 12:10 a.m. of 5.7 feet, and the aforementioned low tide at 4:22 a.m. of 4.22 feet. Our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will happen at 10:41 a.m. and be 8.4 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 5:37 p.m. That will be a 1.5-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide just after midnight at 12:19 a.m. of 9.4 feet. Your low tide for the wee hours will be at 5:19 a.m. and 6.1 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 11:11 a.m. and be 12.5 feet in Larsen Bay. Here are some of the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings coming up. The Assembly is in the midst of a series of meetings. They're having another special meeting tomorrow in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 12:15 p.m. Also tomorrow, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their regular board meeting. That's happening at the Bayside Fire Hall at 6 p.m. On Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting. That's in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Tuesday, February 7th, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having a regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. And on Wednesday, February 8th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And the Assembly will be having a work session on Thursday, February 9th at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. All meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough's Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. And remember, Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, you can get live-stream notifications sent to you. Kodiak Refuge Salmon Camp Registration Lottery is open. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through 8th grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Refuge website or stop by the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center downtown. Packets are available at the front door or inside during open hours, which is Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. And remember, the deadline to enter is March 31st. Three seats are up for election for the Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors. The Board of Directors consists of 9 elected voting directors and 1 United States Coast Guard appointed non-voting liaison. This year, the seats currently held by directors Ron Akeragi, Tyler Cornelis, and Ben Milstein are all up for election. The 3 seats are for 3-year terms. KEA members locally elect KEA's directors. Candidate petition packets are available by contacting the KEA office. To be an eligible candidate, you must be a member of KEA. Completed petition packets must be received by 5 p.m. Wednesday, March 15th at the KEA office, which is at 1614 Mill Bay Road. Can we talk museums for a moment? For instance, whose objects deserve a place on the shelves? Whose story deserves a spot in the permanent gallery? And whose perspective is the most important? Well, yours is. The Kodiak History Museum is making space for your perspective, but they need to hear from you. What kind of stories would you like to see shared in a new temporary exhibit? Tell them why your idea is museum-worthy, and they'll make it happen. Visit them online at kodiakhistorymuseum.org. That's all one word, Kodiak History Museum. Or call 907-486-5920 for more information. And the Alaska Business Development Center will be providing in-person tax preparation again in many villages throughout rural Alaska. So if you live in rural Alaska, don't send in your tax documents yet. There's a good chance their preparers are coming out to you. To stay updated on whether they are preparing taxes in your community, visit the Alaska Business Development Center website at www.abdc.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.